Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts tells tales, the other has a tale. It is Wednesday, November 20th, and I gotta say, post-Rams-Chiefs, nothing really feels the same. It's like a new reality. Like the air tastes a little crisper. The sun is shining a little brighter. Over the last 24 hours, so it's been 36 hours now, everyone I see has like a big smile on their face. We're giving each other like little nods on the street. I winked at someone. Now I'm worried he thought I was hitting on him. But it was all about Rams Chiefs, guys. It's a new reality. I'm joined this week by my friend, Patrick Claibon, host at NFL Network, one of the best football Twitter accounts I follow. And now I know from reading his bio on NFL.com, you were a two-time Alabama decathlon champion. Patrick, I competed in the academic decathlon, so I feel like we've got a lot in common.
It's basically the same thing. I mean, I was in essential math early on in my junior high days. And they're virtually identical. I love it. And honestly,
tell
on
me about
the topic of things, well, it was a long time ago, a few surgeries ago. I was a marginal athlete at one point in my life before fast food and
state champion. State champion. Don't underplay. What was your best of the 10 events? Which one did you excel in most? Was it javelin?
No, it was not the javelin. We didn't have, actually, because that's how old I am. We didn't throw the javelin back in my Alabama days because, of course, it was Alabama and regulations made things pretty dangerous. And so we decided against having spears being thrown around high school kids during that time. But my honestly, I was a 400, 800 runner in high school with a basketball background. And so the versatility helped out, and it also helped that Olympic silver medalist Trey Hardy, one of my good friends who was a rival runner at a school across town named Vestavia Hills High School, he sprained his ankle at the state track meet, and so he couldn't really compete my senior year. And so, yeah, I was able to take a hobbled Trey Hardy down before he won his Olympic silver medal.
Well, my best academic decathlon event, it was called ACTEC, you know, no big deal. I was obviously very cool in high school. My best ACTEC event was the essay, unsurprisingly.
Yes.
Not super strong in math. All right, well, I am actually super glad to have someone from NFL Network today because, as I mentioned earlier, we are living in a new reality, a new paradigm. What was it like after... I keep saying Rams Chiefs. It was Chiefs Rams. Like, who knows? What was it like walking into the office? Because I feel like it would be like working in Congress after a wave election, and you walk in, and everybody's just kind of got a look on their face, like, what's going on? You know, what is this new world we live in? What was the vibe like at NFL?
It was a lot like it was on Twitter. I mean, there was this aftershock. My coworker and friend Chris Wessling, you know, described it as a paradigm shift. We had Daniel Jeremiah saying just there was before that game and after that game. And what you were saying, like, to start things off, I'm serious. Like, in Los Angeles in general, I'm walking with my 19-month-old yesterday. He waves to the garbage man, who honks the horn, leans out the side of the window, ignores, you know, the big mechanical arm, and is like, yeah, and he sticks his hand out, and he high-fives my child. I pick him up, and they high-five each other. That's what the world has been like since this game. And there's people who are upset about points, and I know we'll probably talk about that in a little bit, but, like,
yeah,
it's just different. People were pleased by this game, and that extends in this office and just, like, out in the real world, too.
But there's like a lot to reckon with, which, as you mentioned, we will talk about it because it affects not only the good teams, it affects the bad teams, it affects the good teams that are strong on defense but less on offense, it affects the future of the NFL, how teams are going to be built, which coaches are going to be hired. I mean, there's so much to discuss. I do want to mention, you mentioned your 19-year-old child. We've never talked about... So, like, we're internet friends. We don't actually know each other. So, but I knew you have a child because I was helping Lenny last night do some research, internet research for his question. He puts a lot of work into his question, which is at the end of the show. So, I was on.
I'm already nervous.
Instagram, and first of all, like 90% of your Instagram pictures are of your child, which no judgment. Like, I know that's a thing parents do, but it's a, like a very, very heightened ratio. And so, but we kept scrolling, looking for something like embarrassing. And Patrick, I got all the way, I want to say like to 2016, and I accidentally liked a photo, and then I was like, oh no, he's going to wake up and see that this creep who's hosting a podcast with him accidentally, and I unliked it, so I don't think you got the notification.
No.
Also, I didn't follow
you. Wait,
why'd
you do
so
that?
Listen, man. I'm living on the edge on the internet.
That makes me feel like I haven't fostered the right sort of internet friendship to where you could just let that like linger. Because that's the goal, right? You want to be able to just randomly like somebody's 3-year-old Instagram picture and it just be cool.
What if I let it linger and then didn't mention it and just got into this podcast with you, and it would always be in the back of your head as we're talking, like, she liked this 2-year-old selfie of me. What is going, like, why am I here? What is the function? What is her end game? So our end game today, instead of talking about this week's slate, that's a segue. I know you're a host. I'm a host. No big deal. Just the biz. So instead of looking forward to this week's game, as we've been doing, I mean, they're mostly trash, to be quite frank.
Yes.
I think it's okay. I think you're safe saying that Bills Jags is not going to be a barn burner. I don't know. I mean, Seahawks Panthers has big implications for me personally and my happiness, but also the teams. Packers Vikings is essentially an elimination game from the playoffs, I feel like. Maybe that's overstating it, but it feels that way. Falcons Saints could be fun, I guess.
Yeah, it's a rivalry game. There's some juice here. I can be a pitch man for the league.
Oh, yeah. Pitch me Bills Jags. Titans Texans is actually a pretty meaningful one, too.
Yes, and Bills Jags could be a barn burner if, like, people burn barns in anger, you know, and they're like, Matt Barkley isn't what I thought he was.
I was expecting
him to come back and beat Joe Montana.
Where are these hypotheticals? Are they
barns?
In Buffalo or in Jacksonville? Doesn't seem like a barn culture in Florida.
The prefabricated plastic barns that you can get at, like, Home Depot other fine retailers, like the She Shed, something like the She Shed in that commercial where I'm pretty sure there's insurance fraud being committed. If we could get something like that, like, and they are on fire for a myriad of reasons, but it could be because the Bills offense is bad. And it's fun to talk about the Bills offense being bad until Bills fans get mad at you on Twitter. And that's not
good. Yeah. Well, Josh Allen is back. So that's actually interesting. Speaking of fans being mad at you and me on Twitter. Texans Titans, though, like, so I'll be the pitch man for ESPN property Monday Night Football. And it is a good game. I feel like there should be a segment on this show called Catching L's. That's just me catching L's because I'll come clean. I was seduced by the Titans, largely because they beat the Patriots. It was an error in judgment. You know, you have a little bit too much drink. You're out late one night. Certain things happen. I was also seduced by the phrase tighten up just because I love saying it. So I catch some L's on overhyping the Titans. But anyway, so those are the games. So yeah, great. You know, and Thanksgiving games are mostly trash. Mitch Trubisky's not. Well, we'll talk about the Bears. But I want to talk about this new paradigm. And I thought, you know, like a lens that we could use to talk about it was to talk about the best teams in the NFL. I had a show a few weeks ago with Dominique Foxworth where we talked about the worst teams in the NFL. But you're much better than him, so I felt like I had the cream of the crop of my show. Let's talk about that. He listens to the podcast. Let's talk about the cream of the crop of the league. And so I think, you know, Patrick, you probably agree with me that there are three teams that are much better than every other team right now or that have kind of separated themselves from the pack. But I want you to just tell me, how would you rank your top five teams in the NFL right now?
Well, I would start with the three teams that I'm pretty sure we agree on, the Saints, the Rams, and the Chiefs. They have just separated themselves from everybody else. And the reason that the Chiefs fall behind the first two is their secondary particularly. But then we get into some conversational areas, and I think the Chargers, if I'm ranking my team off of potential, off of what they can accomplish, I think they would be my fourth team, and then the Pittsburgh Steelers would be my fifth team. And I choose not to have the Patriots in this top five purely out of spite.
No Bears, though, actually, is more shocking to me than the Patriots. I mean, we'll talk about the Bears because – so, look, here's my ranking. Okay, I go Saints, Rams, Chiefs, although, honestly, I think the Rams and the Chiefs are basically interchangeable at this point. That was a takeaway I had from the Monday night game. I was like, eh, you know, these teams play 10 times. The Rams win 5. The Chiefs win 5. I don't think
– And we all really die of heart explosion.
Yes, I could not take 10 of those games. Literally. And also, let me ask you this. Do you think, if this game happens 10 times, and this cuts to, I think, a bigger question about, like, whether this is good football that people enjoy, okay? Because obviously people enjoyed the heck out of this game. But if that game happens 10 times, and let's say there are different teams playing, but, you know, the overall, the point scoring, the lack of pass defense, et cetera. Do you think you get tired? I'm not talking about people, you, Patrick Claimond, would you get tired of it after a while? Like, do you think this game was particularly fun because it was a bit of an anomaly? Or do you think, okay, this is new football, I love this style of play, I would be happy watching this a lot?
I think a lot of things played into the fun of the game. First being on Monday night, on a time where we can all really appreciate it. Obviously, the atmosphere in the Coliseum, if you do it 10 times, you're not really going to get that. I think the uniqueness of the game and the circumstances around the game kind of played into how much we were all able to enjoy it together. And so with like anything, you know, with anything, if you recreate that exact thing over and over again, you're going to get diminishing returns on it. But that doesn't take away at all from what we all experienced together on Monday night. Just a back and forth game. Because honestly, like, I was expecting Patrick Mahomes to throw a ball 80 yards and Travis Kelce catch it, and that was the way that the game was going to end. Like, I really believe that because we had seen so much, and having watched too many Warriors games where Steph Curry throws a ball over his shoulder and it goes in at the buzzer. That's what I was expecting because the game was that good. But you know, over and over again, it would start to lose its luster. And that's not to say that, you know, I need defense and I need somebody to have a brain injury. No, I mean, it's just, change is good. And that's why we like the game. But if everything is like the game, then we need change again.
You use the word expectations, and I think that's what makes it fun. That's what was surprising, like not knowing exactly what was going to happen on any play. And I think when we talk about, like, what do we enjoy about football, great plays, great talent, whatever, it's not really scoring per se. It's watching athletes do what they do really well and being surprised by it. I think when you take away that element of surprise, that's when it gets boring, potentially, right? When it really feels like defenses are never going to stop these teams on offense, that's not exciting to me, okay? And no. I with this game, let's talk about this since we're talking about it. We can talk about the Saints afterwards, who you and I both agree are the best team in the NFL right now. I was kind of shocked afterwards, Patrick, that people were praising the defenses because, you know, and they said, well, the defense, they scored this many defensive touchdowns and there were turnovers. That's great defensive play by like three dudes. Okay. But you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't great defense. Aaron Donald is a ridiculous. Samson Ebukam, who had not been good, by the way, prior to this, who could not contain the edge against Russell Wilson to save his life, had the game of his life. Chris Jones and Dee Ford are awesome, but that was some of the worst pass defense I've ever seen. Maybe that sounds dramatic. And again, somebody will come out and say, well, like, you know, they had those interceptions. That's not, first of all, they weren't like amazing picks. So it wasn't like, I really like a consequence of the talent of them. But also, I mean, if anything, those interceptions were a consequence of the fact that these pass rushes were getting home. And I think, you know, those defensive stars that I just mentioned were behind some of them, which is why you think it might happen again. But I don't think those like when we talk about, is this kind of game going to happen again? Not really, because that perfect storm of two incredible offenses and two terrible defenses playing each other isn't going to happen very often.
And that was my number one thing. And I know that you kind of get worn out by people saying that there was good defense in the game, but the thing that I felt was coming off of the game was that people were like, "Oh yeah, defense is dead now." You know,
because
in the analytics community, like, there's the groundswell of the defense doesn't matter idea that's coming up.
Is that, defense doesn't matter is the new? Because I know running doesn't matter in analytics.
Yeah, running backs
Twitter
don't matter. Quarterbacks are the only thing that matters. And so nothing matters other than quarterbacks. But yeah, there's the idea that
so
defense, that was the final nail in the coffin for the industry of defense altogether. Mm. And I kind of want to push back on that because, like, there were still those 8 sacks. You know, there were 30 possessions in the game. Like, each team had 15 possessions. And so, like, yeah, there's going to be a few points. And Tyreek Hill's able to have a sneaky 200-yard receiving game, which still blows my mind. That it's like, how do you have a sneaky 200 yards? And you look up and he has 200. But Johnny Hecker had maybe the best punt I've ever seen in a crucial situation.
MVPs in this game. Yeah, Johnny Hecker. Yeah.
There was just,
okay, but do you agree with me, though? Yeah, there was defense. Like, literally, defensive players walked onto the field and wore jerseys.
Yeah, they were there, and they had an impact. But yeah, I agree. I agree. The secondary play wasn't great, and Aqib Talib was out. And
terrible.
Orlando Scandrick exists and is not, you know.
God. Poor Sam Shields, by the way, was just totally paralyzed in this game. I think this whole, like, is defense dead, right? You were asking, like, it felt like the next day on Twitter was like, defense doesn't matter and whatever. There's two questions about defense right now. And by the way, I love that after the greatest offensive explosion in, like, NFL history, we're not even talking about offense. Because offense is a given with these teams. They're going to, you know, do their thing. But I think there's two questions right now with defense. One is, what does it take for a team built this way to function on defense or compete? And I think everyone's agreeing now, okay, if you're not that talented, which I don't think the Chiefs' defense is, like, super talented, especially at, you know, the various levels. Obviously, they have some contributors up front. And you're struggling with execution. Like, what are the things you can do? Okay, well, you can have a couple game-breaking players who are going to get those sacks and are going to strip sack, you know, the quarterback and cause fumbles and maybe interceptions and hopefully limit them to a field goal a couple times. It seems like there's a consensus forming around the idea. If you are this, like, offensive powerhouse, you need your defense to do that. But then there's a secondary question, which is, what if you're not built that way? What if you have an okay offense but an incredible defense, and we'll talk about the Bears in a moment, who I think maybe fall in that category, can you even compete with these teams? And that, I feel like, is an open question right now in the NFL.
Yeah, and you just have to come at the game a different way, right? The Bears are definitely not going to beat the Rams the way that the Chiefs almost did. It's going to have to be in a different situation. Like, Todd Gurley had 12 carries. And I think Sean McVay would probably be the first person to admit that there could have been the circumstance where they run the ball a little bit more and a little better with Gurley, able to shorten the game a bit. Because that's what a team like the Bears, or really anybody that doesn't have an offense that can score a lot of points is going to have to do. And, you know, it just depends on which team that you're going up against. The Rams really create some matchup issues, but there's still a way to win without an all-consuming, world-destroying. I think there is. I think the game hasn't changed too much since February, and we did see Nick Foles win a Super Bowl against Tom Brady, and I don't think anybody would you know, pound the table for Nick Foles as this transcendent quarterback of an incredible offense. There's ways to do it, and we kind of can become prisoners of the moment in that game. And if we are going to do it, if we are going to become prisoners of the moment, that is the perfect opportunity to lock all of us up. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Well, it feels, I mean, I think you're right. I think there is a way. I think watching the CX Rams games, there's a lot to learn from there. Watching Denver play the Chiefs, again, a Denver team that doesn't have the offense to hold up their end of the bargain in any way, right? And I think the Chicago Bears offense is significantly better than Denver's offense, which is why I think largely because of coaching, by the way. But I think that's why that game's going to be so interesting. But I'm with you. I don't think it's an impossibility. I don't think it's inevitability that these three offensive powerhouses are simply unbeatable. You know, you can't have a defense, I guess, a team that's constructed differently and compete with them. But it's undeniable right now that if you're building a team from scratch, you'd rather have a team built that way because the rules favor you. So, you know, like right now, no, but I'm serious. Like, the reason why I would take an incredible offense with a bad defense over an incredible defense with an okay offense, which historically you would have, I think, taken the more balanced team, is because of the rules. I read this in a Dan Graziano column. Of the bottom half of the NFL team, in terms of points per game, so the lowest scoring teams, only one of them has a winning record, Washington, which we'll get to a little bit later. So basically you have to be able to, you know, score a lot of points to compete in today's NFL. And we've said all this, and we've talked broadly, and we barely even talked about the game. So I want to ask you, like, Chiefs, Rams, I said I think they're basically neck and neck. Do you disagree with me?
I do. I don't see a situation.
Rams are truly better.
I do. I honestly believe that in terms of defensive balance, especially when you get a key lead back, and you're not going to have Sam Shields in a situation where he's chasing Tyreek Hill for the entire game. There were some matches the Rams just weren't able to do on Monday Night Football. But I do feel that the Chiefs, while a great team, it would be tough for me to say that they were a superior team to the Rams. I would possibly give it even, but more times than not, in our hypothetical 10-game matchup, I would give the edge to the Rams. Yeah, just personnel alone, honestly. if I'm saying,
well, it's weird. No, you're not wrong. They have more talent on defense. They've just been playing below it or something. I don't know. Like, obviously everyone knows before the season the Rams were expected to be a lot better in defense than they are.
Right.
So, you know, like, on paper, the Rams are certainly a more balanced team. And I think DVOA reflects that. I believe the Rams defense is ranked, so the Chiefs are, yeah, the Rams defense is ranked 16th on DVOA, which is kind of crazy after giving up 50. I mean, scoring help, the scoring touchdowns help certainly, but the Chiefs defense is 26. So that certainly reflects what you're saying.
Yeah. And I just, and that honestly spreads in general throughout the league. Cause if you put these teams through an entire 16 game schedule, they're obviously both very good and they're going to have a lot of success, but on the matchup, one team versus another, I don't see Wade having the same issues in that game again, but the Chiefs offense does create a significant number of issues, and Kareem Hunt didn't have the impact on the game that I thought he would. And I think the game and the hype of the game maybe got into Sean and Andy's heads as well, and that led to this point orgy that we saw where there was no idea to control the game. And it impacted Patrick Mahomes as well down the stretch. Yes. They didn't need a touchdown and they didn't need to score a touchdown in one play, but the game took him back to the Big 12 and took him back to Texas Tech where he feels like he has to score on every single play, and he can, but that's a problem.
So he was forcing it a little bit. Yeah. I think that's completely fair. I think the idea that you got to think that Reed and McVay, you know, they were looking across the field and being like, yeah, okay. like there's, you know, maybe I'm not going to, I don't know what the game plan, I think, you know, going in, obviously the Rams, Gurley was reportedly hurt early on, like rolled his ankle a little bit or something. And that probably affected his usage. But, I do wonder, you bring up an interesting question, which is if this game is replayed, does it look the same? And I, as you were saying that, Patrick, I kind of think maybe it doesn't. Maybe you do see a little bit more running on Los Angeles's side, right? And you do see Mahomes calm down a little bit, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't think
they would be running the single wing or something like that. But it's going to be a relatively low scoring game, like 35-32, something like that.
Right. Classic. Yeah, right. That classic 35-32 grind fest. All right. We still got to talk about the other teams and the Saints, but before we do, we're going to take a quick break. As always, I'm going to answer some questions from readers, listeners.
Oh, there we go.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
All right. So as always, and if you leave a review, a nice positive review that my mom will enjoy when she reads them, I will answer a question in it. Unfortunately, because I'm taking so long to get through all the questions, some of them are a little bit out of date. So I'm kind of leaving the out of date ones. Sorry about that. Leave another review with a more evergreen question. But I'm trying to get through them all anyways. So I'm combining these two. We're not talking about the Lions today as we talk about the five best teams in the NFL, shockingly. But, you know, they are playing on Thanksgiving and they're such a weird team. And I think that's reflected in these two questions. Biddy Records asks, and this was weeks ago, but it still holds, how good are the Lions? We're 2-3. And then Mr. Bloxham asks, should Lions make a run for Bell? That might have been actually before Kerryon Johnson broke out. So no, I don't think you should make a run for Bell. I was asked about what teams I thought should. I think the Jets, the Texans, possibly the Bills, honestly, are in the mix. Lions don't make sense with Kerryon. But how good are they? Dude, I don't know. I that's some hardcore NFL analysis right there. I have no clue. Patrick, are the Lions good?
No, the Lions are not good. I wouldn't say that they're good.
Why? Why are they so unpredictable?
Well, one theory that Greg Rosenthal presented was that the Belichick coaching tree coaches, they can get into a game plan sometimes that really gives them an advantage, but then they can also not do that. And when they don't have Tom Brady, it doesn't equal wins all the time. And so you get like a situation where the Texans or the Titans can blow somebody out, but then they can also look horrible and lose their quarterback and have to play Blaine Gabbert. So it's difficult to really get a hold of them.
This is just my Titans lingering bitterness talking, but I wonder if Belichick spotted his old buddy's wins in Detroit and Tennessee.
Oh, there's a theory.
The only possible explanation. Golfy McGolface asks, what's your second favorite color? Don't give your first. Forest green. Richard Ringo Starkey asks, who are some of the sports writers you read? It's a Levitard show thing, the color thing. Well, you mentioned, I love Greg Rosenthal. I always read Chris Wessling's pieces, your buds. At ESPN, Dan Graziano, I mentioned, is great. Obviously, Bill Barnwell, Mike Sando, Jenny Vrentas at SI, Robert Klemko. I mean, and then Danny Kelly has been on the podcast at The Ringer. Kevin Clark and Robert Mays are friends. I always read their stuff. I don't want to leave anyone out because there's so many, great football writers right now. JSS058, that might be right. I don't know. So this was asked a long time ago, but I think it's still relevant. Can the Cowboys and Broncos coaches survive the season? I don't think Vance Joseph will, even though, you know, they just eked out this win. I do think Jason Garrett's going to now, shockingly enough. And I don't know how I feel about that. This username is a very long list of letters. Asks, if you can only get one restaurant the rest of your life, what are you picking? You guys ask so many questions about food and like
people like to eat.
I guess so. Maybe it's like a, I don't know. So I have a trash palate and eat like crap and have extremely low standards. But I'm going to answer this question strategically because he's asking me like if you can only run restaurants. So I'm not going to choose a, you want something with a lot of options for every meal, right? Because you can only eat at one restaurant and you don't want something super rich. Is this really white of me to say Panera? I don't love Panera. Oh, like you don't love Panera. Who doesn't love Panera?
Well, I think because you made a choice of something that like nobody actually loves, but it's like, yeah, Panera.
I know. That's so, but like I'm trying to be utilitarian with this because I can't. Like, I can't choose, like, my favorite Thai place because like, I can't eat it for breakfast. What if I'm trying to get like a quick breakfast meal, you know? Think about it.
It could work against you. You can also, like, be too safe with eating in a place for the rest of your life, and I'm worried that you might have with Panera.
I went too safe there. I'm like the Jason Garrett of choosing restaurants to eat at. But it's like, I'm going to keep eating there. It's going to be fine. I'm never going to lose my, you know, ability to get a meal, but I'm never going to win the Super Bowl. Writer Byron asks, what's the best vacation you've ever taken? This is the last question I'm going to take today. I went to Japan a few years ago. It was really awesome. I just went to Greenland, which wasn't the best vacation I've ever taken, but I had the best, like, thing I've done on vacation, which is every town in Greenland of the five towns that has like a little sled dog town outside the town where the dogs live. And if you've ever seen the Wes Anderson, this is an extremely white question and answer section, more than usual even. But if you've ever seen the Wes Anderson film, Isle of Dogs, it really is like Isle of Dogs. Like, there's no one there, and there are just like a ton of dogs, and it's pretty much my paradise. All right.
It does sound awesome.
Yeah, see, okay, thanks. So I got a non-white endorsement on the dog.
Allow me to be the spokesman.
Thank you. Appreciate it. What about, but not Panera. You draw the line at Panera.
Yeah. Fair. I'm going to stop. Put a stop there.
So listen, we're talking about the best teams in the NFL today, and we talked a lot about Rams Chiefs, and my take is that they're basically like 2A and 2B. You have a slight lean to the Rams, and I think that's fair, but we both agree that the best team in the NFL right now is the New Orleans Saints. Now, the obvious, you know, they beat the Rams, so it's like, okay. But beyond that, you know, why do you think the Saints, like, why do you think they're clearly, why do you feel like most people would agree right now that they are better than those two teams, given that these three teams have sort of separated themselves from the pack?
Well, just in terms of how they were able to beat the Rams, because this there was this idea, and it goes back a long way, because Drew Brees isn't tall, that if you get pressure up the middle, that somehow, because Drew Brees isn't tall, then like that becomes a real big issue. But if Aaron Donald is able to almost get statistically shut out against this Saints offensive line, then perhaps that plan with Ndamukong Suh playing next to him isn't actually working, because they had the second quarter against the Saints. I mean, against the Rams, the Saints had 21 points, and Aaron Donald would go over to the left side. Andres Pete would hold him up just long enough for them to get a short pass off to Alvin Kamara, or have a dump off or a screen pass. And when Donald went over to the right side, they double teamed him and they took a shot down the field to Benjamin Watson, and they scored 21 points in that quarter. And it's like a football cliche. A lot of people always say that, like, this team can beat you so many different ways, but it's true about the Saints. And between Brees and Peyton, Marcus Davenport having a defensive rookie of the year candidate of the year, playing on the other side of Cam Jordan. Yeah, just I like to spice it up just a little bit. You know, the Saints fans feel good about him, and they can be a little picky at times.
You're saying all these like very uncontroversial things, like Drew Brees is awesome, they can beat you a bunch of ways. By the way, Marcus Davenport, defensive rookie of the year, and the Saints. You just kind of slid that in there. He's awesome. And I think he's coming back from injury. He's been kind of like a little bit banged up this week. I think he's coming back, and I think you're right. He's going to be a pretty big factor, especially given what you and I were just talking about, which is these teams. What does it take for the really good teams to beat each other when the offense is incredible and the defense is maybe not as good? I don't have to say maybe, although I think the Saints defense is definitely better than the other two defenses, which could be a big difference. You know, it's getting turnovers, limiting field position, and it's so important to have that Marcus Davenport, that Cameron Jordan bearing down on you. I think you hit on one of the biggest reasons why I think the Saints are better than these other two teams, which is the offensive line. You know, you mentioned Pete, who was kind of up and down at the beginning of his career and has really solidified there. I mean, watching the Eagles game, Patrick, just Ryan Ramczyk brutalizing people on screens. I mean, they might have the best, you know, Taron Armstead's been in it. He's been hurt here and there, and he gets injured every night, but they might have the best tackle duo right now in the NFL, or one of them. So that's enormous. And then the other thing, again, when we talk about these great teams and what it takes for these offensive powerhouses to beat each other, you talk about, again, defenses generating turnovers. Drew Brees don't turn the ball over, okay?
Doesn't do it.
Doesn't do it. And so for the reasons you described when you were talking about the offensive line and how they're able to handle a guy like Aaron Donald, that's going to be, in my mind, the difference in a matchup between the Saints and the Rams, between the Saints and the Chiefs. If it gets to that, I don't think it will. But it's going to be the fact that Drew Brees probably won't do what we just saw Patrick Mahomes do, you know? And frankly, I think that's why he's probably going to run away with MVP. I mean, he's probably going to run away with MVP because he's people want him to win MVP, quite frankly. And, you know, but I don't think it's undeserved at all. I just think the combination of the offensive line, Drew Brees, weapons who are that pretty much rival these other two teams, play calling, it's interesting. It's so different from the Saints and or from the Chiefs and the Rams, especially the Rams, right? Because the Rams famously only use 11, right? And the Saints will, I saw somewhere they might be at the top of the NFL in terms of diversity of personnel. So very, very different style of offense, but equally creative and ridiculous. And then finally, a defense that is, I think, pretty significantly better than these other. Do you think that's fair? Because the Saints defense started so bad. Like, where would you put them right now in terms of the overall NFL?
Overall NFL, I would say that they sneak into the top half in terms of defense. Probably maybe into the 12, 13, 14 range. I know they were the number one run defense in the NFL.
Yes.
As of a few weeks ago. Now those numbers are skewed because they're the top scoring team in the NFL. And so teams are resorting to the pass late. But I do think it matters that teams aren't able to control the game and try to do whatever they can to keep Brees and the offense off of the field. But I do know that they're better. Like, Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't going to march out there and throw for 6 gajillion yards again. It's just the start of the season was weird for the Saints defense.
Again.
And I do believe they've come around.
Yeah, I think so. I think it is one of those things where on paper, you probably would look at them in the Rams before the season and say they were comparable. The Rams, actually, no, you know, you probably would have looked at the Rams and expected them to be better. And it was the second season in a row in which the defense was really disappointing at the beginning and had a lot of stuff to clean up for whatever reason, but has simply gotten better and better. Sheldon Rankins is a monster. Like, he's really, and we talk about Marcus Davenport and Cameron Jordan, and yeah, run defense maybe doesn't matter as much in the NFL right now. although he gets interior pressure as well, but he's just, man, he really laid it on Kirk Cousins in that game, but he's absurd. I've praised DeMario Davis a lot, and I think he's played a large role in just a sneaky offseason pickup, has really helped that linebacker group. And then finally, we were just talking about, like, this Rams-Chiefs game had some of the worst secondary play I've ever seen. I don't think the Saints secondary, you know, there's so many profane expressions on the tip of my tongue to describe what I was about to say, did something to the bed. And then later something, but I'm just struggling right now. My brain is
you could combine the two.
Yes, lays the bed. Well, I don't think the Saints defense does that. You know, they had some uncertainty. They're playing the Falcons this weekend. I was thinking, Patrick, about the beginning of the season when, God, they just got destroyed by the Falcons. They won the game, but they just absolutely destroyed by the Falcons passing offense, which is fair. I mean, they're one of the better passing offenses in the NFL. But I don't think, like, PJ Williams has improved so much in terms of, you know, the cornerback position opposite Lattimore's been a big weakness for them, and he's looked a lot better. He played a huge role in the Minnesota win. I actually think the addition of Eli Apple has helped as well. He's become
it takes a lot of pressure off of him.
The defense. Exactly. So I don't know. I just think this team is more balanced. I think they don't have any disadvantages in terms of personnel or coaching. So to me, they're pretty clearly the Super Bowl favorite. I was shocked to hear that you don't have the Bears in the top five. So I want you to explain to me why you left them out.
It's the, honestly, the same conversation we've been having the whole podcast, man. Their ability to produce offensively. And just like you maybe fell in love with the Titans after the Patriots win, that Patriots loss where Mitch and company, and granted, it was a few weeks ago, and they've had time to adjust and adapt since then. But they looked lost, and there was just this inability to produce against the defense that during that stretch of the season had allowed a lot of teams to be successful. So I'm not quite sold on Mitch, and I feel like you were in that same spot.
Fair.
Not too long ago. And that's not enough to get me to have him leapfrog Big Ben at this point, or Philip Rivers at this point. Now they would be my sixth team, but they missed out on the top five, even with the incredible defense and Khalil being back and healthy and Eddie Jackson somehow scoring a touchdown every time he touches the ball. I just can't. I can't have Trubisky on top of those other guys late in the winter months.
Well, I think, you know, again, when we talk about, like, what does it take to beat those really, really great teams, and we just talked about how, okay, well, you turnovers are going to play a big role, and those great teams with bad defenses have are leaning so heavily on generating turnovers. I don't trust Mitch Trubisky not to turn the ball over in one of these shootouts. Whereas I certainly trust Drew Brees. So I think you're right to say he's obviously the limiting factor, even though, as Orlovsky laid out last week, he's made huge steps. You know, watching the last game, the Vikings game, which obviously they won, you know, I still felt divided on him. He's much better than I thought at the beginning of the season, and much better than, frankly, I thought in the Patriots game, which was, you know, I thought I saw a quarterback who still struggled with decision-making, who a lot of success was the product of Matt Nagy's scheme. I don't think that anymore. I think he can make some pretty great NFL throws and his decision making has improved, but I still don't think he has a good deep ball, quite frankly. That was something that jumped out in that game. And he still does make occasional boneheaded decisions. I just think this Bears defense is so different from the defenses we've been talking about. I think we talk about Mac, and freaking Akeem Hicks is just beasting right now. But Patrick, this secondary is so much more, has been playing so much more disciplined, right? Football, because than the ones that laid the bed or whatever mangled expression I use. like, you know, some of these guys, Bryce Callahan in the slot, Prince Amukamara, you know, Kyle Fuller has been pretty good. Like, some of their success, I think, is a product of that pass rush, but they've been really, really good at executing Vic Fangio's defense. So I guess it just comes down to that broader philosophical question, right? Can a great defense compete? And you seem to think no, and I think that's totally fair given the aforementioned advantages given to offense in today's NFL.
It's tough. The advantages are there, and they're real. If there is a defense, and you mentioned Vic Fangio, that can do it, because it's something that's so hard. It's so hard to get continuity in the NFL with the fire everybody disease that always comes up. And these staffs and these teams and these whole franchises have so much turnover. But when the Bears were able to keep Vic Fangio and they keep this group of players together, there's this element of trust between Adrian Amos and Bryce Callahan, all of the guys in the secondary. They know nobody's going to be running out there lost or making moves late or changing coverages late, and they're able to just go and play without this specter of misfortune that these other secondaries have. And they're also able to go into coverage knowing that they're not going to have to cover anybody for 26 minutes like some of these other teams do.
Yes.
Because 52 is there, and Leonard Floyd is making plays as well. And so it's just all coming together, and I still believe in defense. I like we
that
were talking
sound
about
like
the
you
top.
Do. You left them out of the top five, you hater.
I
Why do.
Do
you hate defense? Why do you hate Vic Fangio?
I don't. I just it's Mitch. Everybody,
will you be rooting?
Direct all my desire and my complaints at Mitch. And it's not that he's bad.
Let me ask
it's just
you. No. I want to. Will you be rooting? Because listen, I don't care. Like whatever. Aside from whoever helps the Seahawks playoff probability, I don't care about that. Which is why I was rooting for the Chiefs, because the Seahawks play the Chiefs in Week 16, and I almost tweeted that, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna not tweet this during the game, but because I didn't want the Chiefs to care about winning in Week 16. But
yeah, you don't want them to try extra hard.
No, yeah, I'm like turn it down a few notches. But so the Rams and the Bears are playing in I think a couple weeks, which is really going to put a lot of these larger questions we've been talking about to test. You know what I mean? Like, can a great defense be one of these teams? Whatever. And Patrick, I will be rooting for the defense because I want some pushback on some of these trends. Are you the same way? Like, will you be rooting for this Bears defense to contain Los Angeles?
And it's unfortunate, but it's true. Like, I root for the narrative to die, like always, whatever it is, whatever people have decided It makes me a fan of things that I don't even need to be a fan about or care about, but I just don't want people to say hyperbolic dumb things on Twitter, which probably is a problem that I need to address personally to me.
Instead of like, the NFL is over.
Like, they might as well put on flags and play 7-on-7. Like, go away, that guy. Like, I want that guy to have a bad day. And so whatever makes that guy have a horrible day, that's what I want. Yes. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind. Now, not the Rams being, you know, the team in the city that I live in at this point, and I kind of feel attached to a little bit. But if it's somebody else, whatever makes those people have horrible days and be wrong, and they're forced to go back and delete angry tweets directed at you, me, or anybody else, that's always good. It's good for justice in general.
Well, Vic Fangio, welcome to the resistance. Okay, so your last two teams were the Steelers and the Chargers. What order? You had the Steelers and then the Chargers, right?
I had the Chargers and then the Steelers.
Really? Okay.
Yes, really.
Okay, so I had the Steelers at 5, so you know, we don't have to spend a ton of time then. I think they're – well, God, that Jacksonville game was rough. The first half was one of the grosser Big Ben halves I've seen in a while. A lot of that can be chalked up to the Jacksonville defense looking like the Jacksonville defense. And then in the second half, I don't know how much I don't know how much to praise a Steelers offense that has been good. Really, really good over the last few weeks, but basically just loaded the box on every single play, daring Blake Bortles to throw, and then he didn't. So good job on, you know, playing one of the most frustrating offensive tacks in the NFL. But the Chargers is curious to me because they're coming off of a pretty bad L to Denver, and yet you've still got them at 4. Why is that?
And you mentioned the way that Denver is able to compete. Even against the Chiefs, I don't think Denver is as bad as their record is.
Fair. You're right.
I just don't. And looking at like them holding hands, kneeling at the last second kick, like that team really, really needed that win. And they did everything they could to get it. And sometimes it happens, you know. You can't apologize for 7-3. And that wasn't enough to determine and convince me that this Chargers team doesn't belong inside of my top 5. I seen what Philip and company are able to do, and I believe in that, and I side with that over a Steelers team that's always been inconsistent. Like this run of great Steelers performances, they've consistently been inconsistent, and were Blake Bortles any one other of the 350 million people that live in these United States, I feel like Jacksonville would have had a better chance because at least they would have tried to throw the ball if it was somebody else.
If I was like, hey guys, and they're like, okay, cool, throw the play action. Mina's in. No longer it's Blake.
Yeah. they would.
there's 8 men in the box. She can throw like a check down. I think you're, it's totally fair. By the way, I love that the no faith in the Steelers thing. I love that I have the Steelers at 4. The Patriots aren't sniffing my top 6, and yet I fully expect New England to beat Pittsburgh in the playoffs.
But traumatized.
We know the Steelers defense is going to play zone. But I do want to talk about the Chargers and just end here because they're 6 for me. They're right there. I think it's totally fair to look at the Stanford loss as an aberration. There were a couple really boneheaded decisions at the end by Anthony Lynn and Phillip Rivers, who weirdly passed it instead of running 40 seconds off the clock, thus giving Denver. I don't know if you saw the end of that game. I was screaming like, "What are you doing, Phil?" And some really strange decision making. But the potential is there. You're totally right. This Chargers offense is first of all, the Denver's defense is actually really good, I think. So the fact that they didn't, you know, that they struggled at times against them and Phillip made some bad decisions. I don't think that's not going to happen against all the aforementioned trash defenses we've been talking about, Kansas City and Los Angeles to an extent. I also think there's just so much potential in this Chargers defense until that final drive by base Case Keenum. They had held him to under 150 pass yards. Pardon me. Joey Bosa didn't really look like himself, right? He was still there was one mm-hmm. a couple plays where he got you saw a little bit of that sort of lateral movement he's so capable of, but the burst wasn't quite there, the flexibility too, but the burst wasn't quite there. That's going to come back, I think, and obviously they've taken their time getting him back. This team, this defense has the enough talent, I think, to be better than all of the non-Bears defenses we've been talking about. So I think it's completely fair to consider them a contender. I just, the Rivers bonehead play is a specialty. I just expect those things to happen at this point. But I don't want it. I would love the Chargers to be in the playoffs and compete.
We all would. They deserve it at this point, I feel like, just in general because of all the horrible misfortune that they've had. And so this is, if it's not going to happen now, when is it going to happen? I just feel like this is the year for it to work out.
All right, Chargers, a Chargers Super Bowl prediction from Patrick Claibon. Send that to Olds Takes Exposed. And as always, we will wrap up with some questions for our esteemed guest.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
All right, Patrick. So Lamar Jackson had his first NFL start. You and I were both watching very intently, exchanging some messages throughout the game. So my first question to you is a pretty serious one. Well, serious in terms of it's actually about football. Do you think the Ravens should, based on what you saw in this last game against Cincinnati, do you think the Ravens should roll with Jackson the rest of the season?
Yes. 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 Play Lamar as much as possible and take the reins off. Let Lamar throw the ball. I don't want Lamar Jackson running the ball 27 times. I would hope John Harbaugh
not
doesn't.
Okay.
It's bad. He's not Taysom Hill. He's a quarterback. Let the quarterback throw the football. Please. Yes. I need it because he's the best. I will protect him with my life. I will put myself physically in harm's way in order to protect Lamar Jackson.
If Lamar Jackson was crossing the street and not a car, but like someone on a bike was turning the corner, would you throw yourself in front of the bike? That's a follow-up question.
I would, the old Terry Tate office linebacker commercials, I would destroy the person on the bicycle for merely being in that opportunity, like the AI that we're going to put in cars where you're like choose, it's the trolley question where you have to choose. I'm always choosing Lamar Jackson, and I'm going to wound the person on the bicycle in order to keep the most exciting player potentially in the NFL in the past 10 years. I want him on the field, and he's the most exciting player in the NFL.
After we watched Patrick Mahomes destroy the league. Okay, that's hilarious. I watched this game, which is really good. You know, I did watch this game with a lot of interest, and he definitely ran too much. He got a lot more comfortable both running and not putting himself in danger as the game went on, but also throwing. You know, they didn't ask him to do a lot, but I thought he was pretty accurate over the middle. And, you know, there was one really, really horrible interception, but he made some nice decisions, some nice throws in the run. So I agree. I'd like to see them open up the offense a little bit. All right. Question number two. Have you ever worn JNCO jeans?
Never. I am not a fashion person. So
That's just never being alive in 1995 and being our age.
I was there. I was alive, but you know, I was more concerned about just, I don't know what. So that's fifth grade for me.
Fifth grade.
I just wanted to like be at school, like, and get home. Like, I really don't think I was intellectually developed enough at that point.
What's the worst item? Well, okay, so if you didn't have JNCOs. I didn't have JNCOs either, but I wanted them. I wanted like the flares that the girls had with the stripes on the side, but my mom was like, hell no, why are they so wide at the bottom? What's the worst item of clothing you owned when you were that age then?
That age, I was probably still hanging on to some of those Umbro shorts I had 3 years before that. And were kind of like super young that needed to like, you know, like they needed a red shirt year and to come back and be ready. I was still hanging on to those things. The hypercolor t-shirt was gone by then, as was the slap bracelet. But the Umbros were definitely still there in 95.
I rocked some Umbros with the Kappa slides. Freaking cool. My worst, I'm not ashamed of my Umbros at all, but I did have a puka shell necklace. Okay, you're from Alabama. It was like puka shell hemp combo, too, even worse.
Ooh.
You're from, and I made it myself, you're from Alabama, so... We have this, like, you know, the trope of could Alabama beat an NFL team, and NFL people hate that because obviously they couldn't. It's a stupid question.
Right.
But I'm going to ask you with a slight variation. Could Alabama beat, like, the Raiders or something, but they're allowed to commit offensive and defensive holding on every play?
Yeah. Every play?
Every single play they can hold on both sides.
Yeah, I think, especially with the Raiders not trying to win a football game, so from the front office standpoint, of course the players are still trying to win, but if it would help the Raiders in their mission to secure the number one overall pick, if they could hold every single play, like how would Quinnen Williams is going to go in the top 10. You know, people are waiting for Tua to go, a draft from now, not even eligible this year. If they could hold every play.
You heard it here first. Patrick Claibon thinks that Bama could beat an NFL team. Question four.
You did it. You got me.
Nope. It's over. What's the worst Thanksgiving dish? Like, we're just like, oh, not that. I won't touch that.
It's not that it's bad. I've stated this times. When I eat Thanksgiving, I'm trying to die. And so I want to eat as much as possible. Deviled eggs prevent you from doing that. There's so much better food on the table that doesn't have the caloric space that deviled eggs have. It's just a waste. It's a waste of stomach space on a day where you're trying to eat, go to sleep, and eat again. And I am anti deviled eggs on the table in November.
So,
or really any time.
Wow. Escalating this. So
you want takes. Deviled eggs are bad.
Deviled eggs are bad. Bama could be an NFL team. The Chargers are going to win the Super Bowl. He is just dropping takes, right? It's not coming out of my mouth. It's coming out of his. Take your anger out.
Get rid of the MVP award, too, while we're at it. Just get rid
of it. Well, that's actually valid. But my deviled egg story is, so I couldn't eat eggs for a long time. They would make me sick. I lived with this horrible woman after college for a little bit. And a stranger. Just terrible.
Well,
she was always just... Please. But she was always like bothering me about like housework and stuff, like, you know, lock the door, do the dishes, clean every now and then, just stuff like I didn't want to do. So, clearly I was the worst roommate ever, but she also was like really into cooking. And one night she like made like a whole plate of deviled eggs. This was when I was in my early 20s and I was a maniac. I know, you know where this is going. I went out, had a little bit too much to ingest, beverage speaking, came home, I ate the whole plate.
No.
Woke up, she's like, what happened to my deviled eggs? I was like, oh, like, I literally, my brain was just trying to think of it, and I couldn't think, because I didn't have a pet, I don't know, we were literally the only roommates, so I had to tell her. It was one of the most shameful admissions. Okay, last question, as always, comes from my co-host, Lenny. Listen, I didn't write the question,
I understand.
Take any responsibility. You understand. Okay. And it's actually, his game is about the Rams-Chiefs game. So, Chiefs-Rams game. He was also watching, and he thought that there should have been a lot more defense played, but that's neither here nor there. His question is for you, and I will read it in his voice, as always.
Okay.
Patrick, on November 19th, during the Rams-Chiefs game at 11:18 p.m., you tweeted... LOL. Zero likes, zero retweets. What was going through your head when you tweeted that? What sort of reaction did you expect? I don't know why you asked him that. All the questions in the world.
Shut
zero
out.
Likes.
I got shut out. Zero likes, zero retweets. It's what we like to call a bagel in the tweet game. You know what? Mina, Lenny, I'm a volume tweeter. You know, and it happens, especially in that game. And I couldn't even tell you.
You're the Ryan Fitzpatrick of tweeting. You're just throwing him up there, hoping Deshaun Jackson comes down with it.
Yeah, and it's a burden, obviously, to anybody who follows me. But the timeline is moving so fast in a game like that. And sometimes you just want to be involved, and my fingers are on the keyboard. Mm. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't even, going back, like, I'd have to sync the broadcast to tell you.
I respect
what I was
you
even...
for leaving it up, though. Like, even though you got, because I've deleted some tweets that have gotten, like, you know, like maybe, I don't know, 30 likes or something out of shame, but you left up that zero.
I did.
What's the opposite of a ratio? Like, what's there should be a term for when you get nothing, nothing in response.
Yeah, you're literally tweeting into the void. Like, everybody who puts up with everything else that I tweet, all the nonsensical non sequiturs, and they looked at that tweet and they were just like, no, nothing. I don't want to be a part of this. And that's it. You know, it's just, you have to dance with the girl that brung you. And bad tweets are going to happen.
Well, Patrick, you're the gal I brought to the show today. I'm glad we danced. We laughed. We complained about pass defense. If you're listening, please go find that LOL November 19th, 11:18 p.m. and throw Patrick a few pity likes.
Don't do it. Them. Don't give me a pity like. Are you kidding me? No. Let the thing die. Let it die in relative obscurity. Just the worst tweet. The worst tweet ever.
No. Throw him a like, please. Let's see how many he gets. And thanks for listening. Happy Thanksgiving, guys.